Back in chapter 1 and verse 9, so that's 3-4 weeks ago now we looked at this. Naomi prayed for her daughters. May the Lord show kindness to you, as you have shown kindness to the dead and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Ruth came with Naomi, left behind home, left behind family, joined herself to Naomi, joined herself to Israel's God and God's people. In chapter 2, we saw how food had been provided for them. Food has been provided, but there is no rest. There is no security. Ruth is fed, yes, but she is not fulfilled. She can glean for the 7 weeks of harvest, but what then? Will Naomi's prayers be answered? Will God show this covenant kindness, this tender mercy, this hesed to Ruth? Will God provide rest for Ruth? That's the question that's still unanswered from chapter 1. And here in chapter 3, we see more of the answer to that. Before I dive into this, though, we need to issue a couple of warnings. There is a warning that you will pick up your Bible this evening and you will read this book through 21st century eyes. After all, those are the ones you've got. There are cultural concepts here that relate to the days of the judges, 3,000 plus years ago. They don't read so well into our setting. Cultural concepts that really don't make much sense to us. There's a danger that we might read things that aren't there into the story, and a danger that we might miss things that are there in the story. And so I want to kind of issue three warnings or three little explanations before we dive in. The thing that we oughtn't to read into it. We live in a society, let's be honest, that is saturated with sex. And if Hollywood were making this chapter into a film, it's pretty obvious what would end up happening at the threshing floor. The Bible explains that God created man and woman, and it created sex to exist within the covenant relationship of a man and woman married to each other. It was for a purpose. That they would know each other, but reflect the intimacy that there is between God and his people. The Bible is very clear. That's the context for sex. Within a covenant relationship, within the framework of marriage. And the Bible clearly speaks against, forbids sex outside of marriage. Now, there are some modern commentators, there are some people who would want to read this as some kind of seduction scene with Ruth and Boaz. But all the way through, the author has been emphasizing to us the character of Boaz and of Ruth. So when Boaz was introduced to us, we were told he was a worthy man. And we were told about the way he greeted his workers in God's name. And of his keeping of God's law and his generosity towards the poor. That's the character of Boaz sketched out for us. And in chapter 3, we are told about Ruth's character. She is, again, a woman of noble character, a woman of virtue. All the way through, the author has been careful to emphasize to us the faithfulness of Boaz and Ruth, their attention to God's pattern for their lives. And if what we have in chapter 3 is a seduction scene, then frankly, the whole book becomes a little bit incoherent. Because on the one hand, the author is saying this is the kind of person they are, and then on the other, he would be completely undermining it. Don't see this as you might read it in a tabloid newspaper. If you see things that are not there, you will misunderstand this chapter. We live in a society that's very different. So don't read into it things that aren't there, but don't miss the things that are there. You see, they lived in a society where preserving your family name, the family line, was everything. Well, the greatest reproach, the greatest disaster that could fall on a family was to die without an heir, not to have offspring. And so steps were taken to ensure that if someone died, they could have an heir that would carry on the family name, that would inherit the property as well. And so God's law required, and the custom was, that if a man died, his widow would be married to one of her husband's relatives. You remember that at one time the Sadducees came to test Jesus with this story. Look, there's a guy and he dies, and his brother marries the wife, and then he dies, and another man, whose wife will she be in the resurrection? Jesus says, "Don't be daft." But the principle is there. A widow who didn't have children the brother would marry her so that the family line could continue. Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 5 says this. If they're brothers and one of them dies without a son, his widow must not marry outside the family. Her husband's brother shall take her and marry her and fulfill the duty of a brother-in-law to her. The first son she bears shall carry on the name of the dead brother, so his name will not be blotted out from Israel. Now, let's be honest, that all sounds a little bit odd, doesn't it? I mean, it does. But this, the Levitical marriage, this idea of carrying on the family line, was something embedded in their culture. As I say, something that's not in our thinking, it's not in our society, but it was in theirs. And if we don't see it, that it's going on in this chapter, we're gonna not really understand. But the other thing we've got to clarify here is this. They lived in a society where preserving the family name was everything, yes, but they also lived in a society without the benefits, without the safety net of a welfare state. What happens if you were left destitute in that setting? Well, again, there was a provision in God's law. What would happen is this. You would sell the land you owned. You would sell property. In extreme circumstances, you might even, if that wasn't enough to pay off your debts, you might even sell yourself into servitude. But the law provided that somebody else, a kinsman redeemer or guardian redeemer, they would be able to come along and carry out that family obligation by buying back the land, by paying off the debts. So in Leviticus chapter 25, here we are, again in God's law, this is provided. If one of your fellow Israelites become poor and sell some of their property, their nearest relative is to come and redeem what they sold. He's not buying it for himself, he's buying it back on behalf of the family. It's staying in the family. It's a safety net, a means of support. And that's going on in the chapter 2. And if you're not aware of that, then you're not going to fully understand it. So there's just a couple of warnings that we need to introduce. Some cultural concepts that we've got to kind of have in our thinking because we live in many senses in a different set. Well, there you are. Let's now turn to the text. We begin with Naomi's plan. Naomi has a plan. "My daughter, shouldn't I try to find a home for you?" My daughter is the way in which Naomi has addressed Ruth all the way through the book. That sense of, it's a very tender title that she applies to her. It's the role in this culture of parents to arrange marriage for their children. It's unlikely, I don't want to presume, but it's unlikely that anyone arranged a marriage for you. You had some say in the matter, but there you go. But in this culture, well, marriages are arranged. Introductions are brought about, and it's the role of the parents to do that. And so Ruth is... Naomi is looking after Ruth as her daughter. She's putting in place steps now to arrange a marriage for her. And there is a little kind of, sort of scheming, meddling, plotting going on here. Boaz, that you've been working in his fields, you know, that Boaz. You know, I've said before about him, he's a kinsman of ours. And tonight he's going to be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. What is the threshing floor? Well, threshing, the process of separating the grain from the chaff. So, probably animals trampling on it to break open the grain, and then it's lifted up into the air, winnowed, lifted up in the air, and the draft, the wind, blows away the chaff, and what's good is kept behind. The Bible uses that imagery repeatedly, that the threshing floor is the place of decision, the place where things get sorted out, where things get settled, the deciding place, and that's where Boaz is going to be tonight. And so it's very simple. Wash yourself, put on your perfume, dress nicely, go down in the night, uncover his feet, lie down, and wait and see what he says. This is Naomi's plan. Naomi has a plan. Ruth enacts the plan. There is in Ruth this measure of loyalty that we have seen through all the way through. Mother-in-law, what a daft plan that is. No. Ruth, I will do whatever you say. There is a loyalty here. There's a courage in Ruth's going here as well. There is the risk of rejection as she goes to Boaz. She puts herself in that situation. There's the danger of being alone at night. Why is it that the concern that she wouldn't be a seen? Possibly because somebody seen coming and going in that setting might be mistaken for a prostitute. There's a certain measure of courage on her part and of risk in this plan. But she goes down in the middle of the night. It's dark. Now, I live in the teeming metropolis. Well, at least I live on the crossroads between the Colford Road and East Street. And we've got a street lamp outside our house. I know some of you don't have street lamps outside your house. You know what it is. You get out of the village. You get away from the lights of the houses and away from the street lights. And it's dark. Really dark. And there are no street lamps in Bethlehem at this time. There are no cars going past to illuminate the scene either. It is entirely dark. It is uncertain. The storyteller has created this tension for us as the narrative comes along. She does everything we are told her mother-in-law told her to do. Boaz has finished eating and drinking. He's in good spirits. He goes down to... goes over, lies down at the end of a grain pile, and then Ruth creeps up quietly, peels the blanket back off his feet, and Naomi has a plan. Ruth enacts a plan. Boaz is the man. In the middle of the night, oh, my feet are really cold. And in the gloom, you can't see anything, but you can smell something. That's not Hezekiah the foreman. No, it's certainly not Hezekiah. Something smells good, thinks Boaz. Because Ruth washed and perfumed herself. He can't see, but he can smell. If he was a bit surprised, a bit confused in the middle of the night, waking up with his cold feet. And now there's a question. Who are you? What is going on? Well, who are you? He asked. I am your servant, Ruth, she said. And then she makes this request. Spread the corner of your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer. And we have to understand this. This is not just a request. Look, it's a bit nippy. Flick your coat over this way. this request to be covered with the garment is a request for security, a request to be kept, to be looked after. It reflects the corner of your garment. It reflects the language of coming under the wing. Remember, we saw that in chapter 1 and in chapter 2. And the idea of coming under God's wing as being the expression of his care for them. Well, the same language is being mirrored here, coming under the corner, the wing of the garment. Provide for me. Secure me. Give me rest. Since, why? You are the kinsman redeemer. That one that we spoke about earlier. The one who could buy back and deliver the family from this situation. Well, what is Boaz going to make of this? The Lord bless you, my daughter. This kindness is greater than that which you showed earlier. What was the earlier kindness? The earlier kindness was that she cared for her mother-in-law. She came back when Naomi intended to her. She was faithful and committed to her there. And this kindness is even greater, says Boaz. There were easier routes to find yourself a husband. Now, you haven't run after the younger men, whether they were rich or poor. No, you have placed a loyalty, family connection, above your personal interest. Don't be afraid. I will do for you all you ask. All my fellow townsmen know that you are a woman of noble character. Ah, but there's a problem. Just when we thought we were going to get the happy ending, the problem is this. It is true that I'm near kin. I am the kinsman redeemer, but there's another one. He's nearer than I, closer connection. It is his right to do the redeeming, and I'm number two in line. Can you see the problem? Well, Boaz says, look, if he wants to do it, good, then and redeem. I will submit myself to the law in this. I will do what is right. But if he's not willing, as surely as the Lord lives, I will do it. Ruth has come to Boaz for rest.